Greetings, friends and Firebirds fans, and welcome to the Fire and Ice Podcast, the official podcast of your Coachella Valley Firebirds of the American Hockey League. Coming to you from Palm Desert, California, I'm your John Hayden, right across away from the Birds' home ice of Acrisure Arena. I'm your host, Judd Spicer, along with this bi-monthly endeavor. Also, again, have the privilege and the pleasure of serving as your Firebirds insider. Those articles can be found online at cvfirebirds.com. Of course, that's your home for all things Firebirds, including but certainly not limited to tickets, roster, merchandise information. Also want to suggest that you download very handy CV Firebirds phone application. Great way to get tickets for all things Firebirds. And of course, anything happening at Acrisure Arena. For the sponsor of this program, big high fives go out to Desert Willow Golf Resort right here in sunny Palm Desert. I'm going to call it your putt-to-puck segue. Great way to tee up before a Firebirds game or any day that the Firebirds aren't here, home to the Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively. Get your tee times online at desertwillow.com. Desert Willow should be added, just a mere 3.5 miles away from the Birds Barn of Acrisure Arena. All right, friends, joining me on this November 27 episode of the Fire and Ice Podcast. And might I add, I hope all your Thanksgivings, by the way, we're now post-Thanksgiving. I hope all your Thanksgivings prove bountiful as we head into the holiday season. Joining me, probably not to discuss Thanksgiving, but to certainly talk about what's been happening with the Firebirds to date. It's a voice and an inflection, an excitable one, with which you've undoubtedly become familiar. He is the Firebirds Director of Broadcast and Communications. He is the voice of the CB Firebirds. Evan Pivnik, going to join me, making his debut on the Fire and Ice Podcast. Before we get to that chat with Evan, we're not just going to talk about what's been going on with the birds, on the ice, but talk about his own road, his own hockey path to date, how he made it to the American Hockey League. I'm going to chat about that and chat, of course, about the Firebirds' first 15 games in this sophomore season. Before we do so, a brief delve into this episode's Firebirds freeze frame. Going to start with some November transactions, friends, which have been multiple and myriad. I'm going to call it kind of the shoots and ladders edition. Had a lot of guys go up. They've all come back down over the course of November. Selfishly speaking, I think we're glad that they're all back here. Over the course of the month, Messrs. Shore, Wright, Winterton, Podorolski, and netminder Chris Drieger have all been sent up to the Kraken at various times. And again, we are now enjoying or re-enjoying their services with the Firebirds as they're all back on our roster. Another note of a kind of the inverse shoots and ladders, gentleman that was recently called up on 11/20, Tucker Robertson, name to know. I think we're going to enjoy his services over the course of this CV Firebirds season. Again, called up on 11/20, didn't take him long to net his first American Hockey League goal. Did so two games later in the Birds' 4-2 victory over Bakersfield. Speaking of opposing teams, brief look at the schedule for your 9-6 Firebirds. That 9-6 record, by the way, at present, for now, still early. I mean, the season, 20% in the books, but I think we can still call it early. Haven't really delved into the meat of the AHL season. We're seventh place in the Pacific Division. Kind of an anomaly amid those metrics, I should say. And I'll digress because we're going to get into this with Evan here shortly. But it's weird, Firebirds friends. CB Firebirds, a 7-1 mark on the road. That winning percentage of .875 accompanying that 7-1 mark. Yeah, that's the best in the American Hockey League. As for the home comforts, well, comforts is probably ineptly used because we're a mere 2-5 on our home ice of Acrisure Arena. That win percentage, I'm not even going to mention it, but it charts at 29th. In the AHL. Again, we'll discuss as much with Evan. Those are the games in the books through 15. As far as games upcoming, Birds going to close out November this Wednesday November 29th at home versus San Jose. That is the final game of November. It's a 7 p.m. puck drop. Get right after it, however, at the onset of December with an away and home set. That's Friday, December 1st, followed by Saturday, December 2nd, away and then home versus Ontario. That Friday game on Ontario is a 7 p.m. puck drop. Game on Saturday the 2nd takes place here at Acrisure Arena at 6 p.m. And hopefully we'll score. That's been a problem versus Ontario and their fine Czech goalie, David Rittich. Six consecutive shutout periods versus our Birds. As far as those who have scored over the course and body of work of the season to date, let's get to some of the leaders, or all of the leaders, with the Firebirds. Captain Max McCormick, he is your Firebirds scoring leader thus far into the campaign. 16 cumulative points. That comes by way of 8 team-leading goals coupled with 8 assists. Cameron Hughes, he has 14 points, second on that list. 2 goals, but a team-high 12 assists. Cole Lind, 13 points on the season thus far, 3 goals and 10 assists. Newcomer Marian Studenic, he has 11 total points, as does youngster Logan Morrison. And then next on the list with 10 points in a mere 12 games, mind you, Shane Wright. Back now with the Firebirds after his call-up to the Kraken. Shane Wright with 10 total points, 7 goals, and 3 assists. Again, he has accumulated those numbers in a mere dozen games with the Birds thus far this season. As far as our netminders, Chris Drieger, by the way, I had the pleasure of talking with Chris for my most recent CV Firebirds Insider article. You can find that, as I said, online at cvfirebirds.com. Interesting guy. Veteran guy. Fascinating guy. Talked about all manner of stuff. Hope you have opportunity to check out that article. Back with the Birds now. Over the course of this year to date, he is 6-4 with 2.20 goals against and a .915 save percentage. As far as netminders with double-digit starts in the AHL thus far into the year, that 2.20 charts third in the American Hockey League. Alashtiza Stezka. I knew I was going to butcher that. Let's try it again. Alash Stezka, also Czech goalie, by the way, 3-2 in net for the Birds this season. Goals against, I'm just going to say the numbers, we'll reserve commentary probably for a later time, 4.20 with a save percentage of .875. Friends, that's going to wrap it up for the Firebirds freeze frame. Let's get out to this episode's conversation with our guest, the director of CV's broadcast and communications, the play-by-play voice of your CV Firebirds, the good Mr. Evan Pipp. All right, Firebirds friends, as prefaced at the outset of this episode of Fire and Ice Podcast, presented by Desert Willow Golf Resort, my guest this episode is a native of Oceanside, New York, not Oceanside, California. Important clarification here, right from the get. Went to college at Bowling Green, same alma mater, by the way, as Firebirds head coach Dan Bylsma. Cut his teeth in the ECHL over 5 seasons with the Adirondack Thunder in various roles. Moving his way up the ladder, he has been your Firebirds director of broadcast and communications and a play-by-play voice since day one of our brief, I think I feel safe to say, very successful history of the CV Firebirds. Welcome Evan Pivnik to the Fire and Ice Podcast. Hello, Evan.
Good. How's it going, man?
It's going well. Typically, you're helping me arrange these interviews, and now we flipped it. Might be a little meta to have the director of broadcast and communications actually on the show, but it was probably long overdue. I appreciate you making time to join, man.
No problem. Yeah, it is a little meta. I know it's a little bit breaking the fourth wall, I think. But thanks for having me.
Well, let's certainly break it down. We're going to get to the Evan Pivnik files. I think we're doing kind of last things first, because I feel as though we'll be kind of bearing the headline if we didn't jump right into the first 15 games of the Firebirds season to date. I kind of dangled this. I mentioned this a little bit, but the metric, the stat that really sticks out to me thus far, 15 games into the season, it's rather amazing, man. 7-1 record on the road, best in the American Hockey League for the Firebirds, and a mere 2-5 mark. on the home ice of Akershire Arena. That charts as the 29th, quote unquote, best winning percentage in the AHL. Again, we're just 15 games in. I've asked this to players and coach alike, and now several post-game press conferences. I pose the potentially same unanswerable question to you, Evan. How do we explain this? How do we explain that metric?
Well, thank you for throwing me that unanswerable question. I don't think there is a way to really explain it. I think, you know, it's one of those things where from the outside looking in, it's a stat that sticks out. But, you know, I think inside the friendly confines of the Firebirds dressing room, I don't think it's anything that's really thought about in terms of that aspect. You know, it's they look at it as, you know, they're winning games right now on the road and struggling a bit at home, but at the same time, they have a 9-6 record where that's still pretty good to start things off. I know last year it was a different animal. I think starting 22 games on the road, having a bunch of success on the road, and this is a team that played extremely well on the road last year. They just capped it off with a great home record as well. But yeah, it's still early in the season. It's only 7 home games, and you know, there's still plenty more to be had, and this team's still finding their rhythm, and we've seen that every now and again, the struggles that they've had and a lot of the successes they've had. And they've had more successes than they had struggles. So that's one of the big things to look at. I know for the home fans who want to come see them play at Akershire Arena, only 2 of the games have gone their way. But at the same time, there's still, 29 home games left. So a lot of opportunities for more wins on home ice and get back to being a dominant home ice team.
As you said, just the 7 home games to date. Last year in the regular season, they lost just 7 times in regulation for home games. But hey, it feels like all the ingredients are there. We've got so many of the same players. We've got the same coaching staff, front office the same. Your voice is there. Birds are averaging 8,700 basically per home contest, which is like kind of tied with Hershey for 2nd in the American Hockey League. All these ingredients are there. Fuego is there making noise. But 2-5, it's something that I think we'll see turn around. Is it something that you anticipate that over time, as we near the meat of the season, is going to even itself out?
Yeah, you know, there's been only one real home stretch so far this year in terms of 3 games in a row at home. And the Firebirds won 1 out of the 2 of them. But yeah, you know, it's been home for a game, on the road for 2 games, home for a game, on the road for 3 games, or 3 games at home. And it hasn't been as consistent, I think, as last year was. And yeah, that's because the team played 22 games to start the year on the road, and they had to make up a lot of home games. So it gave them a lot of comfortability playing in Akershire Arena, and guys settled in. But you look to the upcoming months where, you know, January, you have a few more home games. February, the majority of the month, the team's at home. There are only, I think, 2 road games in the whole month of February. So there's plenty of time for the Firebirds to find home cooking and get into that groove of the routines of being at home and playing on home ice.
I can probably self-chastise or asking questions in these post-game pressers or asking it on the Fire and Ice podcast or Firebirds Insider articles, wherever I've been asking questions to these players and the coach. But I prefaced so many times, and I've done it too much. I know I've done it too many times, prefacing a question by saying something akin to, well, last season, or compared to last season. I've asked way too many questions with that as my lead, but it's hard not to. You know, are you personally weary? Are you tired? Are you exhausted of like, hey, we're now kind of, well, we're about 20% into year 2. Have you grown tired of compare and contrast what happened in the magical inaugural year?
I don't know if it's tired, because I'm glad that last year happened. I'm glad it happened for our fan base, our organization, and the players involved and all the staff. I'm glad that occurred, because it was just such a special year. But, you know, every year is so different. And I know the expectations are so high from every single perspective that a fan walked into the building last year, and we want to hold everyone to that expectation. We want to hold our players to that expectation, our staff, or, you know, everything that goes on in the building. But at the same time, it's a new year. There are new faces on this team. If everything was going to be the same, then we wouldn't worry about a whole lot going into this year, because we know that success last year, even though we didn't win the whole thing. But yeah, there's a lot of comparisons, but at the same time, it's, you know, we're 15 games into our second year, and that's kind of where we're focused at right now. It's year two. It's still plenty of time for us to write our story. It's still such a young franchise. And there's still so much more to learn about the team, especially this year's team, to learn about the franchise and see where the franchise is going to go. You know, Acrisure Arena is not even a year old yet. It turns a year, I think, December 14th. So still a lot of chapters to be written in this season alone. So if we could flip the page, that'd be great. But I know last year was such a special year, and it made everyone a Firebirds fan who still is a Firebirds fan. So we obviously appreciate that.
Last year's story, and I just did it again. But it not only did it write itself in many ways, but there were chapters penned that were incalculable, that were unthinkable. For the narrative that you referenced in year two, do you see some of these seeds of the story being told in a different and compelling way? And if so, what are those storylines that you see maybe starting to come together a little bit?
Well, one of the things I think we've seen already this year is the impact of the younger players in the Kraken organization, which, you know, last year is the Kraken's second year in the National Hockey League, and that leaves a very small draft pool for them to choose from. Now, another year, players have gotten older, and we're starting to see our first real look at prospects and using the AHL as a development league fully now for the Seattle Kraken. There's, you know, Logan Morrison, Jacob Melanson, guys in that vein, who have played very well this year. Ryan Winterton, who got a shot at the NHL already. He has three games under his belt, and, you know, he's played less than 20 pro games. So we're starting to see that. And I think that is something that fans will get to see. And it's really cool, because you had the story last year of Ty Cartier, who was an undrafted free agent, was signed to the Kraken as a kind of a prove me, you know, prove us right sort of thing. And he did that. And he became a success story, and now we get to see other success stories blossom because of the opportunity to get down here with the Firebirds and with this coaching staff. And I think that's going to be the biggest story of the year. Hopefully it's going another long run and a good chance for a Calder Cup, but big picture from what the Kraken want to see, they're doing things right. And this is, as I mentioned, a development league where we're going to see guys develop. And the way they develop is they work on their game here and end up in the National Hockey League, where they get to play some games. And we've seen plenty of guys go up already. We've seen two guys who made their NHL debut in the regular season this year. Joey DeCord worked on his game last year, and now he's pretty much the 1B for the Seattle Kraken in terms of their goaltending. Shane Wright gets looks. Andrew Podorowski's back up with Seattle right now. So something's going right here, and I think that's the narrative, that we do things the right way. We develop players the right way. And hopefully that translates into us winning and doing everything on the ice as well.
For your mention of Andrew Podorowski, is kind of a not necessarily an on-show or in-show correction, but an update in the time between recording the introduction to this episode and speaking with you. I had mentioned previously Andrew Podorowski was now back with the Firebirds, but he is now within the slight window of time between these two recordings, he's been called back up. So good for Potsy, called back up to the Kraken. He is among 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the chutes and ladders that have gone back and forth. I think you mentioned the rest of the gentlemen of all shapes and sizes, positions and ages. That to me also speaks to, I don't want to be too critical, but some of the inconsistency that we've seen in play from the Firebirds thus far is there's been a lot of movement, a lot of shifting of personnel, whereas first even like 3 months last year, we barely saw any. There was so much consistency, and the lines really developed pretty fast, and for the most part, they kind of stuck together over the course of the year. Yeah, eventually we saw some guys called up, but really for an AHL team, we had a lot of the same guys and a lot of the same lines. I mean, to you, to these moving pieces, does that speak to some of the inconsistency we've seen through 15 games?
Yeah, I think a little bit. You know, there's familiarity, but at the same time, a lot of these guys got to play together during Seattle training camp, then Firebirds training camp and whatnot. But, you know, it also speaks to, you know, the challenges that Seattle's going through in their first month and a half of the season as well, because you know they had an unbelievable year last year. They went to the second round of the NHL playoffs, which was exciting for that franchise to be able to do that. And you know, it takes not only a lot of skill to have a successful year, but it takes a lot of luck as well. And unfortunately, the Kraken have not had the best of luck in terms of injuries and success as of late. But you know, they're turning things around. They're playing really well as of late. They're getting points in meaningful games. They're picking up wins, and you know, they've had some recent injuries that have hindered them a little bit. And that's how it kind of works. The injury up there, that's why we watch the Kraken games all the time. I know that's a big part to make sure that everything's going right up there, because if things aren't going right, then they look to the AHL. And you know, last year was a different animal in terms of that, just because of what I said before with the prospect pool.
Yeah.
You know, the Kraken did an outstanding job of filling the Firebirds rosters with NHL contracts last season, because they didn't have their own players to funnel into that system. And I think with the overflow of that, we didn't see a lot of transactions last season, but their success also added to that as well. Because when you're winning games and people are staying healthy, then you don't really want to change too much. And that's really kind of what happened last year. But, you know, we had Jesper Froden and John Hayden go up a few times last season. Joey DeCord got a couple of call-ups, but those were the main three. Now we've seen Devin Shore go up, Ryan Winterton, Shane Wright, Chris Drieger, Andrew Podorolski. So I believe that's the five, but that's already in the first month of the season. So it's great that the Kraken are using the Firebirds the way they should be used, calling up guys in times of need. And, you know, that's why the Firebirds have depth as well, to try to fill that role when someone gets called up day of the game and someone has to get a phone call in the afternoon saying, hey, I don't know what you're doing right now, but you weren't planning on playing tonight, but now you're in, so get ready.
You certainly highlighted, Evan, the youth movement we've seen with the Firebirds this year, and these gentlemen have also spent some time with the Kraken, as you referenced. Probably something that we've not discussed quite enough, because all of these young men have produced, and we've seen several instances of games where the cumulative age of the front line has been like 60 years old, 20 year old dudes, 19 year old guys, 21 year old players, ranging from Messrs. Winterton, right, all guys we've talked about, Melanson, Morrison. Now we brought Tucker Robertson up into the fold. I expect him to have a really nice season with the Firebirds and stick around. He already netted a goal. All these young guys, they're not just here seemingly to develop. They're already really good.
Yeah, they are. And I think that's a testament to the high level of junior hockey that a lot of these guys play, because, you know, you think of junior hockey and you think of just kids playing, but, you know, in these major junior levels up in Canada and the OHL, the WHL, and, you know, it's big time stuff. Even the QMJHL, like they take it seriously up there. And Logan Morrison was a guy who did so well last year in the OHL. He was one of the top scorers in the whole league, and that translated right down to here quickly. And I think also a lot of it that helped too is a lot of these guys were with us during our playoff run last year. After their season was up, they came and joined the Firebirds, and we saw a couple of them appear in games, but for the most part, they were just along for the ride. And I think that was a big learning experience for a lot of these guys, to be around older players, to be around a team that went to game 7 of the Calder Cup final. Cause that's not an experience that you could just read about and then learn. It's one of those livable experiences, and all these guys got to do it last year. Although they weren't suited up for Coachella Valley, they still got to be in the locker room all the time and during practices and go on the road. So that was a really valuable experiences for a lot of these young players to get their first taste of pro hockey. And I think they kind of picked up right where they left off.
Friends, you're tuning into the Fire and Ice podcast presented by Desert Willow Golf Resort. This is the official podcast of your CB Firebirds of the American Hockey League. My guest is Evan Pivnik. It's a voice that you know. He's the director of broadcast and communications for the Birds and the play-by-play voice as well. Let's take it from ice to Mike, Evan, and tell the listeners a little bit more about you, how you got here. One of the things that I read about you is that you grew up kind of in a play-by-play atmosphere. Your old man, he was calling minor league baseball games on the home front for you, was he not?
Yeah, he in the mid 80s, when My dad was finishing up college up in Albany, New York. He was the play-by-play voice of the Albany Colony A's and Yankees from, I think, 83 to 85 or 82 to 85. I'm not sure exactly on the year, but yeah, that was his passion growing up. And it didn't go the way that he wanted to go, but he got some formative years there, able to call high level minor league baseball, which was really exciting. And he still tells me stories to this day of players that he saw play and friends he's made along the way. Every time we go to goes to a city, he knows someone. So from those baseball days. So growing up, it was, you watch sports and sometimes you sit with a parent and he tells you, watch this player play a game, watch how this guy does this. And growing up for me, a lot of it was, oh, listen to how this broadcaster does this, or listen to how, Mike Emmert calls a hockey game, or Jim Nance calls a football game. It was kind of in that line. So I was always in tune of listening to those voices from a very young age. And I think also growing up where I did on Long Island, I was exposed to a lot of great broadcasters, in the area that I grew up in. I was very fortunate to do so because the local cable channels, you have the for hockey, the Islanders, Rangers, Devils, and Sabres. Those were all on local TV. Then you had the Jets and the Giants, the Mets and the Yankees, and the Knicks and the Nets, and all those. And New York's the number one sports market, so it's the number one market. So you have to have the best of the best calling those games. And I got to listen to some great voices growing up, and they kind of got me through some tough sports times. So I'm very fortunate to be able to be where I'm at, and have all those to thank for it.
How does your style ultimately differ from your dad's style? The sports are different, but I guess from play-by-play styles between the two of you.
I haven't, I, you know, it's funny. We used to go to games and stuff, and we would like do play by play with each other and stuff like that. But I don't think I've heard him call a game in quite a long time. And I know baseball is way different than hockey is. Baseball, I think, is way harder than hockey is to call. And I know hockey's fast paced and hockey is, hard hitting, and there's so much going on. But baseball, when everyone comes up to me and people say it all the time, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how these baseball guys do it. Especially, I think the best thing for baseball broadcasters is the pitch clock, because now they have less time to fill. Baseball, you have a pitch, and then you have about 30 to 40 seconds to talk about something, especially on the radio. So I give radio broadcasters and baseball all the credit in the world, and that's a lot of games to do as well. So they have 162 games to work with and fill about 4 hours on the air and about 2.5 minutes of actual action. And I love baseball. I love listening to it on the radio. So I give those guys a ton of credit.
You referenced the great Doc Emmerich. I remember you and I talked about this the first time that we met, or at least the first time that we played golf back when you were at Bowling Green. I think it was the arena's 50th anniversary. You had opportunity with a fellow alum, not just Dan Bylsma, but alumnus Doc Emmerich, to call a game together. One of the things that I read about that experience, and you got some nice attention for that, deservedly so, for that super unique opportunity. But what stuck out to me most wasn't necessarily the game or the call itself, Evan, but was rather your observations of watching what he did before the game, watching what he did off the ice. And a phrase that really jumped out to me was how he obtained extra information. It seemed like it really taught you an important lesson about your trade, getting that extra information. Is that correct? And if so, what did it teach you?
When I was in college, that was my senior year of college at Bowling Green. So, I'd been around a lot of the guys for 4 years, and there's he it was funny. He got his doctorate at Bowling Green in 1975, which is why they call him Doc. So, he came back for that 50th anniversary game, and we got to do the game together. He did color for me for the first and third, and did play by play for the second, which was really cool. But during morning skate that day, he wanted to go in and go around the locker room and talk to the players. So, we let him do that, and he was sitting down having like meaningful conversations with probably 75% of our roster, which was really cool. And he started talking about, he went up to one of our players, Mitch McLean, who actually plays for the Calgary Wranglers. Good buddy of mine, went to school with him. He sat down with Doc Emrick sat right next to him in the locker room and started talking to him. He goes, you know, you're from Brainerd, Minnesota. Do you know this guy? It's like, and Mitch is like, yeah, that guy was my coach when I was 8. And like, the fact that Mike Emrick, again, this is a game that he took off of NBC Sports that day to do this game as just for fun. And NBC let him do it. And he's doing all this research for a hockey game that's going to be on college radio. And, and he did all this preparation and all this research on these players. I was just astounded that he knew stuff about guys that I know. I knew guys for 4 years, and he knew more about them just by, I don't know how he does his research, but a lot of it's just by talking. And he had really meaningful conversations, and they weren't so much interviews. It was just more, you know, we have this mutual friend. You know, what was this like? What was it like growing up in Brainerd, Minnesota? You know, so-and-so lived there too, right? Did you know him? It was all these little connections that he made that I think also helped players open up a little bit more. And I think our guys too were like, yeah, I'll talk to Mike Emrick. No big deal.
And it's something that I gather through your time in the ECHL and now a year and a half into the American Hockey League that you've used that tool. You've used that lesson and attempted to create your own conversation, relationships, things like that with players, correct?
Yeah, you know, you have to, because people don't want to hear stats over and over again. You can tell so-and-so, hey, Andrew Podorowski is a point-a-game player. Yeah, you know, 3 goals and whatever assists in however many games. Like, you could say that over and over again, but what's the story you're kind of telling there? What's, you know, the story now would be Andrew Podorowski has been called up. Who's the next guy to step up? What's his story? Where was he at? Where was he drafted? Why was he drafted? Where did he play junior hockey? Where did he, you know, it kind of those sort of things. And I also like when there's family aspect to it as well. I like when one of my favorite things is when guys have connections to one another, especially opponents. You know, I like when, you know, there's a guy in the Firebirds and a guy, let's say, on San Diego, but they played minor hockey together and they grew up wherever in Ontario and they knew each other from then. Or there's 4 guys who all played college hockey together and spent formidable years together in you know, a university D1 program. Like, I like all that stuff. That stuff sticks out to me because, you know, hockey is such a small world and everyone knows everyone, not maybe personally, but knows of everyone. Right. So that's the sort of thing that I kind of like, you know, because I could tell you stuff that you could look up, right? But I like to get a little bit deeper than that and maybe pique some interest. If you want to learn more about a player, like, oh, I heard Evan talking about this, about John Hayden. I'm going to Google him and see what else I can find. And hopefully that you know, because at the same, you know, I'm calling games, but at the same time, I'm trying to make a connection for these fans and to these players in any aspect I can.
Today, of course, is an off day for the Birds, Evan, and that's why we have time to talk. On game days, I generally try to leave you be, although from time to time, I'll walk behind you and Grant Fuhr and just kind of see what you're doing. And I've noticed, and we've talked about this at least once or twice, about your notes, about how you lay out and prepare a game. And it is a vast, I don't want to say it's like a huge board, but I mean, it is, there's a lot of information that you record. Before
I
games.
Have one here. Hold on. I'll grab one for you.
Okay.
For those who are listening.
I was going to say, for audio purposes, we'll try to do an app description of Evan's game prep. And
so this is my one from Bakersfield on Saturday.
Okay. I mean, this is bigger than 8x11, double-sided, double-paged. It is vast. How long does it take you to put one of those together?
I can do it about 2.5 hours, probably.
Okay.
So it's 2 8x11 pages that are glued onto a manila folder. So I have our line chart for both teams, with how many goals they have, whatever. And I'll write little notes up top above the players' names. On the right, I have the records of the teams, the standings, the power play, the penalty kill, what they are at home and on the road. I have the season series. So what the two teams line up each other as. I have the leaders between the two teams against each other, the power plays that, the penalty kills that. Then I have team notes, what the latest trends are for the two teams and transactions and whatever other notes that I end up writing down. But yeah, a lot of it is pretty standard stuff. And if I have some decent notes, I'll try to throw them on there as well. But I work off of line combinations. That's how I learn players quickly, and that's how I get the flow of the game. It was funny when I first started in the ECHL. I was like, okay, well, I'm in pro hockey now. I need to do it as pro hockey broadcasters do it. And I've seen a lot of guys who have these really long charts of different names and alphabetical order and stuff. I was like, well, they're pros. I should probably do it that way. And my first game in the ECHL, I made my own, and I hated it. Like, I didn't know what was going on, because in college I worked off of line combinations. And I was lost. And I'm like, you know what? At like three games in, I'm like, let me go back to what I did for 3 years. And so I did that, and I think I got back my groove after that. So I've been this is kind of my second year doing – this chart has changed quite a bit in its template over the last 3 or 4 years, but this is what I use. This keeps me sane. I need to have something written on it, or else I'll be all over the place.
Whether it be your time in the ECHL or the American Hockey League, is there a name that has continually befuddled me that you just trip over time and again? There's some tough ones out there.
There are some tough ones. It's funny, last year I had a lot of trouble with Phil DiGiuseppe. He played for Abbotsford last year. I don't know why I stumbled over it. It was, it's pretty standard name. I had a lot of trouble with that. I don't know. I pride myself on trying to do the best that I can to pronounce everyone's name correctly. You know, I learned from a very young age, especially in college. You know, the people that are listening to the games, mainly in college, a lot of the times you have your fans, but a lot of them are the parents and the families of these players. So, I want to do my best to make sure I'm pronouncing the name correctly. If I don't know how to pronounce a player's name, I go on YouTube and I try to find either an old highlight, or I try to find a video of them being interviewed where they say their names themselves. And if I can't do that, then I watch as many highlights as I can and see what the overall consensus is on how to pronounce a player's name. But yeah, there's no one has really given me a lot of trouble, luckily, yet. San Jose last year, they had a lot of different fun names. And I think I was watching, I think the Kraken were playing the Sharks the other day. And a lot of those guys who played in the Barracuda last year on San Jose.
Yeah.
And John Forslund, the TV broadcaster for the Kraken, said something along the lines of the all pronunciation team for San Jose. I'm like, yep, I remember that last year. And I think their whole defensive six were kind of all over the place in pronunciation.
Couple more quick hitters with Evan Pivnik before we let him go and get back to work today. We talked about how much preparation you do. I've seen it in person. I know that you get there very early on game days. You do a whole day of work even before the game starts. We discuss your preparation chart. Have you ever had an instance, Evan, where you got sick, you had a flat tire, something happened, and you did not have those hours of pregame preparation, and you had to rush to the game, and you got in front of the mic 6 minutes before puck drop?
Funny enough, in the ECHL, we had some pretty crazy travel sometimes. For instance, we would play 3-and-3s. So you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which some teams in the AHL still do. But here in the Pacific Division, we don't have to do that, which is very nice. I'm very grateful we don't have to do those anymore, because a lot of them involve travel. And a lot of times in the ECHL, they didn't realize how far some cities are from others. So a lot of times we play Friday night in Adirondack, which is, you know, just north of Albany, New York. We play in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is 5.5 hours from Adirondack, Friday night. We play at home Saturday night. Then we play Brampton, Ontario on Sunday. Brampton was 7.5 hours with a border stop. And Brampton would only play at 2 p.m. on Sundays, because they thought that they rivaled the Toronto Maple Leafs, because they're about 30 minutes outside of Toronto. So we had to bus, and we'd play Brampton on Saturday night at home. And we basically race each other back to Brampton to play a Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. There are numerous times where we got into Brampton at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning because of weather and whatnot, because, you know, it's the middle of winter in upstate New York. Like, it, you're gonna hit some traffic and some rough stuff up there. So there have been situations where, it's a 2 o'clock game. We got it at 10 o'clock. I got a 30-minute nap in, and warm-ups are just basically touch the ice for the guys and get off the ice. And, you know, that leaves me with little preparation, but at the same time, you know, if I need to do it, I gotta do what I gotta do. And I don't have excuses for if I don't, you know, if I sound off that day or I don't sound as prepared. But luckily for now in the AHL, and when I was in the ECHL, we saw teams a lot. There's a couple years ago in the ECHL where Adirondack played the Maine Mariners 18 times.
Oh, man.
So I could have done that blindfolded at that point. Just a matter of notes and stuff like that. But yeah, and I think once the game starts too, the narrative sort of writes itself, which is one thing I was talking about baseball and hockey, how they compare to broadcasting styles. Hockey writes itself quicker than baseball does throughout a game. So you can kind of talk about what happened previously in the game and where the game is going to go and where do you think the game is going to go and what's kind of propelling the game to go that way. Where in baseball, you know, you have to wait a couple hours to see where maybe the game might end up. But, I could do it with very little to no preparation. I don't want to do it with very little to no preparation. I like having time to go out and do it. I'm very thankful for the AHL website a lot of times and their media site to help me get through and the game notes too. That all helps.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up with that one, let you get back to the workday. And, well, you've got some time to prepare for the next Firebirds home game against Wednesday 29th at home against San Jose before the double dip away and then at home the I-10 rival Ontario on December 1st and 2nd respectively. Pleasure working with you. Pleasure visiting with you. Look forward to many great calls to come across the CV Firebirds sophomore season. Evan Pivnik, appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, Jed. Appreciate it, Matt. I'll talk to you soon.
Sir. All right, Firebird Squad. It's going to wrap it up for this episode, this November 27, 2023 episode of the Fire and Ice Podcast presented by Desert Willow Golf Resort. Fire and Ice, the official podcast of your CV Firebirds of the American Hockey League. So appreciative for the time, your interest, your ears. Additional appreciation goes out not only to this week's guest, Evan Pivnik, but to this program's sponsor, Desert Willow Golf Resort. Just a mere 3-plus miles away from the Birds' home ice of Acrisure Arena, making an excellent putt-to-putt day. Head on over for a round at either the Mountain View or Firecliff courses, respectively, and then slide on over to Acrisure Arena for a Birds game. Or, heck, head on over to Desert Willow anytime there's a game or not. Hey, when you're making those tee times, by the way, at DesertWillow.com. Probably should check out the awesome on-site Palm Desert Golf Academy. Maybe you're a rusty swinger, maybe you're a snowbird, maybe you're just visiting the desert to check out some hockey and want to play some golf. Great way to amp up some swing instruction over at the Palm Desert Golf Academy. Those dudes at Desert Willow, by the way, they love their CB Firebird hockey and season ticket holders since the get. Again, friends, hope this finds all well with you and yours at the onset of the holiday season and that your Thanksgivings proved equally blessed and bountiful. Look forward to seeing you at the Birds home ice of Acrisure Arena for the next home tilt on Wednesday, the 29th of November. Final game of November for the Birds. That takes place at 7 p.m. versus San Jose. And again, we turn it right around with an away and home series against our I-10 rival, the Ontario Reign. Friday the 1st at Ontario, and then coming back to the desert Saturday the 2nd, 6 p.m. puck drop versus the Ontario Reign. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, as always,
one valley, one team, rising together.